have in session is Guru. So he would be talking about, has abundance of B2B data made prospecting effective? And he is the Chief Growth and Product Officer at Amplus ex-ZoomInfo. So over to you, Guru. I think we'll start with your presentation.
Okay. Thanks, Deb. Thanks for having me here. Has abundance of B2B data made prospecting effective? So I'm just going to run through a couple of slides, guys. Just stop me if you feel like you have any questions, raise your hand, or just ask in the Q&A sections. Okay, so I'm not sure how many know this fact, but the first email campaign was run in 1978 for promotional reasons. A guy called Gary Theok sent an email to 400 users for DEC missions, which got $13 million in sales. Now, the lead to deal. So this is something which I used a terminology throughout the slide. It's the distance between a company and its customers. So this must have been the shortest in this particular campaign, right? So to understand more about how B2B data has used in B2B sales and marketing, you need to understand how B2B sales and marketing has evolved. So I kind of split it into three waves. So I'm going to go into each of them. The first wave kind of like started like around mid 90s to mid 2000s. So this is the time when people started going, especially companies, right? Companies started going online, website, social presence, all increased in those 10 years. And customers, for example, right? They had access to tons of content for the first time because now companies have websites. You can go read whatever you want. And on social, you can have engagement, reach, all kinds of activity. This enabled a huge flurry of activity in the first wave. But when this first wave happened, the lead to deal distance actually got a little bit bigger. And B2B data companies kind of helped or had tried to help companies during this phase by having a lot of contact directories and company firmographic details online. So think about a phone book, just move them online, right? So this leads us to the second wave. That's the inbound wave, right? So mid 2000s to early 2010s. This is the time frame when you can say like the big events like HubSpot was started, the iPhone was launched. So as a company, you had option to increase a lot of different content formats, video, audio, text, infographics, right? Endless. And then there was a huge flurry of activity in automation. So you can automate emails, nurturing campaigns in social, in email, in webinar. You have too many things going on there. And customers had the option to change the whole process. They made it like a buyer-led journey. They wanted to be more informed. They wanted to be educated. They wanted to learn on their own pace, not at the pace at which companies wanted. So this also kind of slowly, the inbound phase, right, increased the distance again by one chunk. So B2B data companies kind of competed to give more contacts, more company information, and something new came along, which was more behavioral data, trying to get like, what people are doing in what websites, what content are they reading. So this started coming along, right? Can I get more impressions? Can I get what people are doing it? Basically like, how they're engaging and using that engaging to nurture the prospects back. So this increased the distance a little bit. This leads us to the third wave. The third wave, I'm calling it noise, right? So from online, we went to inbound to noise, which is early 2000 to 2020. So companies, especially B2B companies, wanted to get ahead of this wave by having too many softwares they had to buy, and new roles started emerging. As you can see this chart here, this is a MarTech chart with billions in funding, right? From 2011 to 2020, we went from 150 companies in sales marketing technologies to 8,000. That's a huge jump. It's almost like, 60 times. And from a work culture, right now we're in the middle of a crisis where we're rediscovering new roles as well. We went from full-time, part-time to short tenure to remote distributed. How is this affecting, right? How is this affecting all of us in the B2B data segment? Because customers also are gonna leave a lot of digital footprint across different platforms. We didn't have TikTok 5 years back. We didn't have multiple platforms earlier. So the footprint and the exhaust increased in this noise phase. And this cemented the next pillar in the distance. So you saw the distance curve, right? It went from 2 blocks to 5 blocks and it kept increasing. And any B2B company that's trying to sell you data is saying, okay, now I'm going to give you one more thing, which is proxy intent. I'm going to tell you what technologies companies are using. I'm going to tell you what content they're reading. I'm going to tell you what search terms they're using in SEO, what are they using in LinkedIn. So kind of give you more data, but the noise is not going away, right? So what's next? What's the fourth wave? And more important question is, why has this distance increased, right? Between the company and a customer, why has it increased? And if you look actually more deeper into why it has increased, in the last 20 years, actually we went through a complete data grab phase, right? We wanted to have more and more data, more quantity, and quality as always a circumspect. We couldn't measure it. We don't know how to measure it. Coupled with this was the business changes, the technology changes. That was a huge volume, and the pace of change also was phenomenal. This led companies to kind of say, okay, I'm going to answer this problem with scale and automation, which didn't solve, because right now everybody, every small company to big company is using tons of tools, 60 tools to automate the whole marketing process, bombard people, and the distance between a customer and a company has just increased nonstop. Now, what's the answer? Scale is required. We need scale. You need to have scale in a B2B data environment, but the personalization is important. So you need data in the hundreds of millions. At the same time, you need data in the hundreds, right? You need that personalization. You want your data to be off the shelf, but also something you can tailor make. You want the scale, but you also want the expert research. So that is something like, you know, your data partner for the future should be both a combination of a platform, like a product or a data product, and as well as somebody who can tailor and give you intelligence more. So I can, I think I'll address more questions, but I can go into the Q&A section to talk about a particular case study in more detail as well. On to you, Deb.
Sure. So we'll take our first question, Guru. The question is, what is the right frequency to data refresh to keep it real time?
Okay, so that depends on your data set and the volume, right? So if you look at it, right, like 10 years back, you could say my data is 10 years old or 5 years old and you can get away with it. Today, if you say your data is 3 months old, you cannot get away with it. Think about it right now, right? In how many layoffs have happened in the coronavirus situation, right? Okay. People have moved, people are working from different places, their homes. So all the data you have, at least 30 to 40% or even more, is no longer valid.
Right.
So it's kind of like you need to have access to near real-time data. So it keeps changing, and with the environment and your company's nature, it's going to be an ever-evolving feat.
Sure. So the next question, Guru, we have is, where do you put prospecting in the sales funnel?
Okay. So I think today we are going into a mix of outbound and inbound. So prospecting is going to be a little lower compared to what the marketing team is doing. I feel it depends on which team you're talking about. If it's an inside sales team, then you can actually sit very closely to the marketing and catch on it. Like, for example, right, this is a marketing team doing an event, and if you get a demo request, immediately the inside sales team can jump on it, right?
Sure.
That's one use case. But if you don't have that much of a marketing team, and then your prospecting will be the first touch point of a customer. So it depends on how your team is structured and what your philosophies are.
Right. Understood. We have a question from Kiran. He asks, in such a dynamic situation, how do you evaluate the right data?
Okay, that's actually a very good question. So Kiran, there has been a lot of literature in the last 20 years about we have the best data, we have the most accurate data, right? So it's very hard to test it at scale, but it's very easy to test it at your level. So you can just focus on, okay, I don't care if you have a million records, as long as I get my 100 lead records, and just focus on those 100, test it and validate it. That's it.
Understood.
And you also have to learn about data companies pretty much are not in the business of selling data. They're in the business of selling the convenience of having data. So your question would be, even if I get 50% right data from this particular vendor, if I don't go with that, how am I going to get that 50% at least? So that's the question you have to ask.
Understood. So Somnath asks here, what is the right tool for prospecting apart from LinkedIn, which is more effective in terms of quality of data?
So I think, let's talk about LinkedIn, right? So LinkedIn is not the primary source of data, because you've seen your own friends and colleagues who've not changed their LinkedIn profile. They might it might show that they're still working in a previous job, but they're not working there. So LinkedIn data is like, I would say 50 to 60% kind of valid. So keeping that in mind, you should have the same bias to know, like, all data sets will have that kind of a bias. So again, it depends on your own small sample. You have to try different vendors to see what's the right mix. And that is exactly why my slide deck, we talked about, you can't just choose a vendor who has a lot of records by saying, okay, he has already the scale. But you also need somebody to say, okay, I want more intelligence. Can you get this for me? So you want a mix of product and service.
Understood. So the next question we have is, I'm using multiple tools now to check data accuracy. I feel each tool is accurate with one data point. How do I choose one, accuracy or abundancy?
See, I think, like, you know, both are irrelevant as long as your use case demands it. See, if you are a small sales company, like you have only one sales guy and he only needs 200 to 300 leads to work on every month, right? That is not abundant. Anybody can give you. So you have to, like, figure out which is the right vendor who can give you that intelligence. Right. The question, the actual point of view should be about, okay, it's not about quantity or quality. It is more about, can this vendor, can this partner actually, more of a, no, not even vendor, a partner help me with getting me the basic data set, but also involve me in the process to get me finer data sets.
Right.
So let me talk about a case study here that I think this is the perfect question aligned to that. So to all of you listening there, this is a very interesting topic here. So one of our customers, what he asked us was, okay, so I want data. We said, okay, fine. We will give you 100,000 records based on your revenue industry title filter. I said, okay. So we asked him a follow-up question. Which 100 are you going to work on today? Right? So then the particular customer was thinking, okay, now I have to think more into my use case to see which data point I need to prioritize the first 100. And then he came up with some data points about, okay, a particular title, a particular team has to be working in three different remote locations and web traffic. So you have to have a mix of common data points and your own personal data points that are so important to your business. That's the balance.
Got it. Okay. So the next question is, what is your opinion on data sharing economy? Will that be the future?
See, data sharing is a very interesting aspect. We've already seen it earlier. So if you remember, there's a company called Jigsaw 10 years back or even 15 years back, which started, which said customers can come and upload whatever data they have and we'll pay them credits. They can use to redeem and get whatever data they want from our platform. So that company eventually, like, you know, went on to get acquired by Salesforce, but it never went anywhere as a data company. The reason is data companies spend a lot of time verifying data. It's not about availability of data. That was a problem 10 years back. To draw a parallel, 10 years back, if you think everybody in this session would be saying, I don't know how to watch movies online. But today, the question is not about how to watch, it's about what to watch, because of availability of it. So data availability and abundance is not a problem. So data sharing will only evolve if you're able to verify it at the source with people.
Got it. So what are the latest trends in the data industry? I'm sure we have crossed more than just company and contact intelligence.
Of course, yes. So company and contact, we've definitely crossed. I think we have also crossed a little bit of proxy intent. I think the right now, what is it? It's the hard to get data sets. It's the more personalized data sets. And on one end, you have the more niche personalized data sets. And on the other end, you want to have a single source of truth. So it's like a customer data platform. So I have all data coming in and I'm able to know which one is valid based on this particular platform is scrubbing it off, let's say, a billion records. Okay. So you have those two trends emerging at both extremes.
Understood. So what do you predict the data decay percentage once the pandemic is over?
I think in most companies, the data decay is going to be upwards of 40%.
Okay. So this is a question from Harsha. He asks, what would be B2B 15 years from now? Any advancements and how do you cope up with the change?
So what would be B2B 15 years from now?
Yeah.
So in what dimension? Data dimension?
He just doesn't ask that. Probably you can answer for the data.
So, okay. So B2B data, 15 years, I think like, you know, it depends on one big overriding sentiment about opt-in data. You have to see like how big that trend is going to come in terms of, there are two trends actually. So one is me opting in data. Second is how am I going to get paid for my data? So those two trends could significantly impact how B2B companies kind of use it. I think we can even combine B2B data with referral. So there are some angles which could possibly emerge depending on how open people are to selling their own data.
Sure, understood. So can we use prospects data for inbound campaigns in some way?
Of course, yes. So there are a lot of tools right now, so where you can use your prospects data mapped to the IP address. So when people come, so you can actually start prospecting, but and when you know these people are the same people coming to your website and checking it out, you can merge these two. That's one way. The second way is even if you get an anonymous kind of a visitor, you can use that to immediately get data on what particular company or title this particular person is coming from.
Got it. So how much data is enough data for outbound?
So the question directly depends on how many leads you want. So you want 100 leads. Okay, so let's take a conversion percentage. 20% of all customers are responding to your campaign. So you need 500 data points, right? 500 records. And again, see, the thing is not about adding more rows. It's about adding more columns.
Got it.
So that is exactly what we say about, we use a term called contextual intelligence, where we say, don't just keep adding more rows, because like there are only 7 billion people in the world. At one point, you're going to end out of it, right? Your target customers. Keep adding more columns, because move away from revenue industry title. Let's focus on more data fields that will let you choose the first 100 out of the 100,000 records that are your prospects' target market.
Got it. So another question that has come up is it better to buy data from data companies or to prepare your own, even if it takes more time?
Okay, I'm not sure how you're going to make your own data, but see, again, it's going to be a tailor. It's actually a fast. See, I think like the way to compare that is cooking your own food better than eating at a restaurant? It's not. So there are benefits to both. The idea is one is time consuming. You're going to spend more time, right? If you're going to cook your, if you're going to prepare your own data, it's going to take a lot of time for you to get to even, let's say, 10,000 records, right? Instead of that, you just work with a vendor who's trustworthy. Within a couple of minutes, your deal is done. You're happy. They're happy. And they've provided value. You provided money in exchange for that value.
Got it. So we'll take, I think, one last question now. How important are data enrichment tools?
See, I think data enrichment tools are, it's not an option anymore. It's like the necessity right now. Because as I said, like, you know, you should move away from the more profile information or the company firmographic information. You need to add more data points. You need to understand the behavior or the proxy intent. You need to know what custom data points are so relevant for your business, right? So data enrichment is very key. Like I was telling about an example of a customer. So this customer wanted the web traffic. They wanted a particular engineering title working and a particular title working in three different locations, right? Now, this is gold to that particular customer. And for the next customer, those three data points are completely junk.
Got it.
So data enrichment, it depends on your use case, and it's going to become very commonplace.
Actually, we have a really good question. I'll just take that up from Arunava. Will AI, IoT, and ML really authenticate the buyer behavior of a prospect in B2B sales?
Okay. So, I mean, it depends on how these technologies are embedded into our lives. If you look at it, right? So IoT is completely embedded into, like, you know, all the appliances we use. And in the future, I think, like, you know, we're going to have a lot of more video conferencing, more real-time AI, AR solutions at home, right? So these are going to validate and kind of think about it, right? If I watch a video and it can automatically sense my interest and intent in the video itself or in a live conference, immediately it's going to help. Let's say a sales guy is going to have 100 Zoom calls, and immediately at the end of the 100 Zoom demos, Zoom is going to tell him these 30 people were more engaged than the remaining 60 using eyeball attention and AI mapping. It is definitely going to give you that extra column or data point for you to focus on those 20 instead of the 100.
Right. So got it.
Anytime, this will always help us get more data points to prioritize our data set and pick the right prospects.
So Guru, I think we'll end our question answer session here. We'll take up questions and then forward that to you. If you have any other resources that you want to share, please do share it with us. We'll put that on our landing page.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Guru. Thanks for joining in.
Hey, hope you liked the recording. Do check us out at Amplus B2B Pinch for 11 more killer content. Also try out Amplus Sales Buddy if you want to ring that next customer who is waiting for you. Hey, hope you liked the recording. Do check us out at Amplus B2B Pinch for 11 more killer content. Also try out Amplus Sales Buddy if you want to ring that next customer who is waiting for you.